Hello, and welcome to Front Page Radio with your host, international journalist Dan Wooding, the founder of Assist Ministries and the Assist News Service. Dan has been a journalist covering the world for more than 41 years now with a focus on missions. And now here's Dan Wooding with today's guest.
Welcome to today's program, and I am in the great city of Albuquerque, New Mexico, with a dear friend, Dr. Jeremy Reynolds. And Jeremy is a fellow Brit, but also he became homeless after a time while he lived in America, and now runs Joy Junction, which is New Mexico's largest rescue mission. So first of all, Jeremy, thank you for being on the show.
Good, Dan. It's good to be back on Front Page Radio again. Also, of course, good to see you. It doesn't seem like, 12 years ago we first met up in the Anaheim Pond in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that was the Jesus People reunion. That was fun.
Wasn't that great? And there was just one or two folks in there, basically me and you. You introduced yourself. I was covering news for SRN and USA at the time. And we just formed a quick relationship, which has blossomed and grown and matured over the years.
Now, you are from the south of England, I understand, the city of Bournemouth. For Americans who don't know the geography of Britain, tell us a little bit about Bournemouth.
Which a seaside town, as they like to say, and probably if any of our listeners enjoy watching the public television series comedies, there's one on I like to see called Keeping Up Appearances, which of course is meant to be set in that same town of Bournemouth, with a lady called Hyacinth Bouquet, and she's very ostentatious. But again, that is meant to be set in a retirement home, you know, in the seaside town of Bournemouth.
Yeah.
And of course, when I grew up, Dan, I didn't know anything about poor people, about poverty. We have what we call council houses, which is equivalent to Section 8 housing over here. My dear departed mother, bless her soul, she didn't have much to do with poor people. And back at that time, I used to think if you were poor, it was because you were poor, it was your own fault, because you were lazy, a lack of self-worth, a lack of work, a lack of everything. Wasn't until a few years later when I got saved, and I believe God called me over to America in 1978, I began to see there's a whole lot more to being poor and being homeless than being lazy. And again, that's one of the things we try to do at Joy Junction, or I try to do, to make the plight of the invisible people, homeless people, a lot more visible to people both in Albuquerque and in New Mexico and all over the United States.
So you talked about getting saved. Was that in Britain, and what happened?
It was. I went away to private school for a number of years. I finished my last couple of years of high school, what's called a technical college, basically the last couple of years of high school. And I was very lonely, Dan. I didn't fit in. I was not happy at all. Found my enjoyment in reading, basically. I still do. But I was invited to a small church in England by a young lady I really liked. And so I thought, well, maybe there's a chance for a relationship if I go to the church. And what was funny, Dan, is even with churches on every corner, even with Bible stores, Christian radio over here, we always assume that people must know the gospel. They must know what it means to be born again and saved. These folks, I guess, thought I did as well. And at the time I got saved, gave my life to Jesus back in 76, I was one of the very few people visitors to that church. I just thought being a Christian was going to church, reading the Bible, listening to boring hymns, hearing candles burn and whatever. There's nothing wrong in that at all if it's predicated on a relationship with Jesus Christ. But what I was doing when I was in Bournemouth back before I gave my life to Jesus, going through all the forms, ceremonies, rituals, yeah, not enjoying it, the reason why I didn't know the person behind that, I didn't know Jesus Christ.
Mm. So here you are, you've been well educated, you're from, I understand, a pretty dysfunctional family. Can you tell us about that?
I can, absolutely. My father had multiple sclerosis. And my mother made a point of telling me she only stayed with him because he was a sick man. And she did the best she could with him until he died back in 1982. So I went to the tech college, finished off at high school. And one day the pastor came up to me. I'd been going to the small little church for a few weeks. And he says, do you want to do something about it? I'm like thinking, it? What? What the heck is it? He goes, well, you know, and I said, well, I don't really think so. He says, okay.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know that ITS was having a relationship with Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So I had some preparatory examinations back in January of 1976. I get the 70s and the 80s confused sometimes.
Yeah.
And one day I thought, well, you know what? I passed my examinations. Back then in England, they called them the A-levels,
yeah.
A precursor to always going to university. And I thought, I don't believe in God because I don't believe in the Bible. But in all, if I believed in the Bible, I would believe in God, and I better believe what he says in his word.
Yeah.
So I bought a copy of Good News for Modern Men. My father was somewhere, my mother was out shopping, as the English say. And I bought a copy of Good News for Modern Men. For the first time in my life, Dan, I said, God, if you're real, speak to me in a way I can understand.
And explain what Good News for Modern Man is.
That's a modern language copy of the Word of God.
With lots of pictures.
Lots of pictures, sort of stick cartoons almost, right? As far as I remember.
Yeah.
Some evangelicals like it, some don't. Yeah. The point was is that God uses what he chooses to use, right? Mm. And so it was amazing, Dan. I'm not into dreams and visions a whole lot, but, you know, I do believe God still speaks to his people. And at that point, I said, God, if you're real, speak to me in a way I can understand. And honestly, Dan, I was reading the first six chapters of the Gospel of Luke. Those words stood out on the page to me like they were 6 feet high.
Yeah.
God then gave me a supernatural ability to believe his word. So I believed the Bible, but still didn't know what to do. I believed God's word, but didn't know what happened next.
Mm.
Then the next week, a week to the day, reading a book by a departed Anglican clergyman called David Watson, who's since gone home to his heavenly reward. And he laid it out very clear. He said, if you have not repented of your sins, if you have not asked Jesus Christ into your life, you're a sinner and you're going to the hot place. I thought, oh dear, now I have no excuse because I believe God's word.
Yeah.
I better do what he says.
Sure.
So at that point, it was either the last week of January or the first week of February of 1976,
mm-hmm.
I asked Jesus to come into my life and save me.
Mm.
But of course, then it gets even funnier, almost, Dan, because my mother was a good lady, English. She thought, because she, kind lady, she baked apple pie, and because she was English, she believed in the flag and the Queen, she had to be a Christian, right? And so my evangelistic heart swept into full being, and I told my poor mother she was a heathen.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, and to her, yeah, and it was obviously a silly thing to say. To her, a heathen was somebody who swung around the trees.
Sure.
She didn't take kindly to it, and I don't blame her. I have matured since then, folks, and gave my life to Jesus, went away to Bible school, and a year or so later, I just felt God was talking to me to come to America. Yeah. Which is even worse for my mother because she thought I was emigrating to the colonies.
Now, so you say God was talking to you in what way?
I just felt a real desire. That's a good point because often we as Christians lapse into that evangelical jargon.
Yeah.
I just felt like a real drawing and a real leaning and a real love for the American people and a real love for the land of America.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt I just make inquiries about coming. And in June of 1978, with $50 in my pocket and a one-way ticket and an offer of a place to stay from a pastor in Orlando, Florida, I did the deed and I boarded the plane and I landed in Miami.
Yeah.
That was in the days when Air Florida was running.
Yeah.
And I saw when I landed in Miami, Dan, I had $50 in my pocket. Air Florida was charging $20 at that time from Miami to Orlando. I had $30 when I got to Orlando.
Yeah.
I got a taxi to the pastor's house of maybe $15, a visitor's visa. You know all this.
Yeah.
You know, couldn't work because I was on a visitor's visa.
Yeah.
Met this English pastor and his wife who offered me some tea. I was exhausted because of the time lapse.
Yeah.
One of the first things he said to me that night was, we want to tell you, our faith has got us where our faith has got us, and you're not going to sponge off us.
Oh.
You better believe God and let him take care of you.
Oh, boy.
I'm thinking, I'm tired. Discouraged at that time, I'm thinking, oh God, my life is really in your hands. You better take care of me now. So I went to bed that night.
Mm-hmm.
Next day they got up and they said, we have an idea for you. Thinking, okay. And so they had an idea to hook me up for that summer with a bunch of Pentecostal holy rollers from Cleveland, Tennessee. And so I traveled to southern states learning how to teach and preach extemporaneously, to trust God for my supplies and food.
Yeah.
Wonderful time of ministry, street ministry, and tent meetings and whatever.
Yeah.
And went back to Orlando a few months later that year, and I got married to my ex-wife the next in April of 79.
Huh. So here you are in a new land. Did they understand you in those early days?
Funniest of story, because there was a wild Cajun evangelist who was running that summer youth camp from Monroe, Louisiana, called Pat Hayes. And he used to have a lady that came up to him. Pat used to like to have me come out and teach, preach, hear a few words of how I gave my life to Jesus. So about the third night after, this lady says, "Can you have the guy from England come up and speak?" So Pat goes, "Well, you must like what he has to say." She goes, "No, I don't understand a word of what he has to say. It's the way he says it." So probably he didn't understand much of what they had to say.
Wow. Now, what was the story of you getting homeless? And here you are in the land of plenty, and everybody's got a big car, and they've got lots of money, and you become homeless. What happened?
It's a great question, Dan, because I felt for many years I had a calling in my life to full-time ministry.
Yeah.
Now, the way that I believe God has shown me is just like the psalmist David had a calling on his life to be king, mm-hmm. but there was a distinct time gap or time lapse between him being called to be king and when he actually became king.
Mm-hmm.
So just because God says, "Hey, Dan, I want you to be in ministry,"
yeah.
you have to drop everything, give up your job, and refuse to work and say, "God, take care of me." Mm. It's in God's timing and in God's way.
Yeah.
So I told my new wife at the time, I said, "Hey, God called me to be a minister. I'm not working."
Yeah.
She was understandably less than thrilled. And we had a child also. I had a stepson and a child by that time also.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing some volunteer prison ministry and basically wouldn't work and ended up becoming homeless. Had a terrible, awful attitude.
Yeah.
So in late 81, early 82, we were homeless.
Huh.
Some friends in Titusville, Florida, told Sylvia, they said, "Well, we'll take care of you and the kids. When that Jeremy guy, when he gets some brains and really starts listening to God, then we'll consider taking care of him, or we'll take care of him." So scariest thing of all, Dan, I on the end of January 1982, I was on the New Mexico-Texas border. Not a penny in my pocket. Actually, I had a few dollars in my pocket and was homeless. I was discouraged. I was depressed.
When you say you were homeless, what did that mean?
I was literally on the streets. My wife and kids were back in Florida. I was on the streets on the New Mexico-Texas border. We had couch surfed for a while. Mm-hmm. I thought I'd go and stay with some friends in Arizona, but didn't have enough money to get there. Literally, Dan, it was freezing. Rain or sleet. Maybe snow was coming down. It's been a long time, obviously. And nothing worse than seeing a motel, a brightly illuminated sign that says, you know, HBO, cozy rooms, clean beds, $15 a night, and you have like $12 in your pocket. I felt desperate, Dan. I stuck my thumb out like this. The spray from the vehicles on the road was getting me wet. I grabbed some newsprint, you know, some like old copies of whatever local news media they had, tried to sleep, and all the bumps and all the dirt clods and the stones from the grass like nudged me in the wrong places or poked me in the wrong places. So it ended up at night. 9 o'clock, I was desperately gave up. And there was a little restaurant that closed at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
And it had like a little shed with like a lawnmower and some stuff behind it. There was a fiberglass mat or a fiberglass piece. Grabbed the fiberglass piece, and I spent my night that night on fiberglass.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what? It taught me something. It taught me to be grateful. It taught me to trust God. Then the next morning, a trucker came by. I had my thumb out, which was cold, wet, tired. And he must have thought I was crazy. He said, "Where do you want to go?" I said, "Where are you going?" He said, "Where do you want to go?" I said, "Wherever you're going."
Yeah.
He gave me a salami or bologna sandwich. Never had a sandwich that tasted so good in my life.
Yeah.
And ended up months or two later in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Of course, the site of the infamous prison riots in the early 80s. But by that time, Dan, I had come to a very important conclusion. I thought, "God, if I'm going to be in ministry, it needs to be me asking you as in God, not me begging people, not finagling, not begging, not conniving. You're going to have to take care of me. I will ask for stuff. I will ask you to take care of people you give me to take care of, but I will not ask for stuff for my own needs."
Mm.
Ended up in Santa Fe, New Mexico, met some wonderful people who took care of me, gave me a job. A few months later, these were people from Full Gospel Businessmen's Fellowship, and ended up helping my ex-wife and kids come out to Santa Fe. And had a ministry in Santa Fe for 4 years called His Place Coffee House. That was a ministry that started off as a coffee house. Coffee houses were the rage of the 80s, as you know. Had Christians here. It was like the Christian Revival Center for a while. And as fast as the Christians rather than, but as fast as then the homeless began to hear about free food, and as fast as the homeless came in, the Christians left.
Oh, dear.
And then we ended up opening up at night to house homeless men. I was beginning to see, mm-hmm. as I let go and let God do, beginning to see what God was doing in my life. And the homeless came, and I began to think, well, maybe, God, you have a calling for me, sharing and caring and sharing your love with the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And so that opened up at night for homeless men. We expanded to women and families. Got two front teeth punched out by a drunk. Had 4 days off in 4 years. Then Dan made a huge mistake.
Yeah.
I said, God, it's time for me to resign. That wasn't a mistake, but they said, I will do anything you want except never. I will never open up another ministry.
Yeah.
I want to do something easy like being a pastor. Ha ha, right? Well, Dan, you know, God has a sense of humor. Never tell God.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
I took 3 months off, helped out at a ministry at that time on Kirtland Air Force Base. It was when Caspar Weinberger was Secretary of Defense and was leasing out, renting vacant military buildings to be used for helping the homeless.
Yeah.
Then heard about this property down here in Albuquerque, South Valley, where we are now,
yeah.
And opened up Joy Junction with nothing, really, except God's love and what I felt was a word from Him back in mid-'86.
Yeah. Wow. Now, the name, where did it come from?
Yeah, there was a TV program at the time called Joy Junction,
mm-hmm.
and a church here at the time called Joy Fellowship. But I felt that the homeless... When you're homeless, you're at a critical junction in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And you need joy at that junction to get back on your feet again.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a specific directive I felt. Again, that feeling I have from God to keep the entire homeless family together at one of the worst points in time in their entire lives.
Mm.
Because missions, not criticizing any of them, but missions typically, through space constraints or a variety of other issues, have had to separate the family. So husband goes over one way, wife goes over the other.
Yeah. How did that come about that you decided to keep the families together?
I looked at what was the need. A reach out to Jesus Family Chapel, the ministry I was helping out at for months on Kirtland Air Force Base, was again based upon that assumption of keeping the entire family together. There was another shelter in town which kept families together but closed down shortly after we opened.
Mm-hmm.
And I sensed there was a real need. I wasn't in the ministry business to compete with people. I wanted to complement services that were not there. And so I saw the big need was for someone to take care of the entire husband, wife, and kids, husband, significant others, and kids.
Wow. So here you are. You've been homeless. You're a Brit now living in America. Why Albuquerque? Why on earth did you settle here?
Well, you know, back in Florida, I was doing some volunteer prison ministry, again, which led to me being homeless because of my rotten attitude. I'd heard of Santa Fe, New Mexico,
mm-hmm.
where they had a big prison riot, and I figured maybe they'll harm me as a prison guard or something. And so I just said, Santa Fe, you know, and so I ended up in Santa Fe. Prior to us being here, prior to Joy Junction being here, the same property down for many years was used as a Catholic Charismatic Drug Rehab Program, who we had sent many people down to, or a number of people, from my old ministry, His Place Coffee House.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, hey, this property is vacant. I was praying one day, and I just felt, property is vacant. When you're so rent to me.
Yeah.
And they said, well, we'll rent one trailer for your wife and kids, give you 1 week's free rent. We'll give you a building for the homeless, 5 weeks free rent. After that, it's $650 a month, which 25 years later doesn't seem much, but back then, Dan, it was a fortune.
So here you are now. What would roughly the figure be that you house each night?
That's amazing. We're housing as many as 300 people each and every night.
Yeah.
We're feeding as many as 16,000 meals a month, 10,000 meals a month here at Joy Junction. And a wonderful Christian brother here in Albuquerque, Victor Jury from Summit Electric, gave us a mobile feeding wagon. Called me up a couple of years ago, went on to eBay. It was for sale in West Palm Beach. He flew me out there. Myself and a colleague drove it back. So 7 days a week, we're out in the community down feeding beverages, giving Bibles, praying with people, giving personal hygiene kits to people who are either living on the street or living in some of the very low-end motels here in and around Albuquerque.
You've just taken me on a little tour of Albuquerque, and there's a very mini Skid Row, nothing like the L.A. Skid Row, but it's still a Skid Row. Is that mainly where you go with the vehicle?
Oh, no, Dan. That's one of the places. We go all over. We go to the far southeast heights. We go into West Mesa. We go in another mesa called the Pajarito Mesa, which is off the electric grid. We go to a number of hotels all up and down Route 66,
mm-hmm.
and we go all over.
Wow.
And we do that 7 days a week.
Huh. So on top of that, you have a very unique 12-step program. Tell us about that and why it differs from the AA 12-step.
Well, yeah, we don't want to criticize anybody, Dan. Obviously, and I know you don't either. So the AA works for a lot of people, will continue to work for people. But our recovery program is based upon the Tyndale House Life Recovery Bible. Basically, it's a Jesus version of AA. It's faith-based, and we have classes a number of days each week. We have volunteer work assignments. We have a case manager. We have a chaplain. We call him Happy Happy Chappy Gene, the Smiling Jesus Machine. This is a dear, dear brother who actually, Dan, when he speaks, he stops to smile at you. And it's a wonderful, wonderful program. And what's so blessed about this is we have a graduation. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of our listeners hadn't thought. Maybe some of our listeners, they've got high school, maybe undergrad, master's. They've gone to higher levels of schooling. And you feel a tremendous sense of accomplishment when you graduate.
Yeah.
But so many of our folks staying here, their self-esteem is bad. They feel have a lack of self-worth. Dan, they've started but never finished anything. Mm. So when you finish the program, which is very hard, we have a ceremony. We have a special steak dinner.
Huh.
We print up certificates. We have University of New Mexico red caps and gowns. And it's a huge deal. And we give them a certificate and a gift, and it basically is just like graduating from a regular college, because obviously we're not accredited.
Yeah.
But it's something for them to hold on to and can play an integral part in these folks getting back into mainstream community life.
Yeah, that's wonderful. How did that idea come about?
We had it for a while, but it's not really functioning as a regular recovery program. Mm-hmm. Let me have a wonderful staff member, a former manager called Robert Probst, who's now the program manager and the assistant director, and the assistant manager, assistant director at the Long Beach Rescue Mission, who really got that program in shape for us as a real program.
Yeah.
And so we've just taken what Robert, we've taken the foundations that Robert built and increased them from there.
Yeah, yeah. Over the years, have you seen homelessness get worse and worse?
Oh, so much worse, Dan. You know, some years ago, there was something called welfare reform, which I was a fervent advocate of. Under former President Bill Clinton, I'm a fervent advocate of welfare reform because I think you and me in private citizenry and the church does a much better job of taking care of the homeless than the government.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, welfare reform says you have a 5-year maximum lifetime limit of welfare benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So the second day that was enacted, or maybe the first day, some local media came to me and said, tell us how it's affected you. I said, come back in 5 years and ask me. So from that time to now, we have seen our numbers go up from 150 to as many as 300 a month in the private sector here in Albuquerque. It's done a wonderful job of keeping us funded. As a faith-based ministry, we don't take any federal, state, county, city funding. But what's happened now in the economic downturn is we have an abundance, a super increase of people needing help.
Mm.
But our donor base also has a depletion in their own personal economy. So more people needing help, but less people able to give.
Huh.
So myself and my development crew, we try and make the work of a dollar go two or three, and we have to work harder and harder to be out there in the community to let the need be known. And again, to making the invisible people visible and to tell people there, but for the grace of God, go you and I one paycheck away from poverty.
So is that true today, that so many people really could be on the streets very soon if there isn't a turnaround?
Absolutely. You know, Dan, I've been hearing stories on CNN and other media, I mean, about people, you know, the banks doing repos on houses. One poor guy I heard about a few weeks ago, he had let his house go. The bank had repoed his house, and then they sued him after repoing his house for the money they lost in a short sale.
Oh.
Not only did he lose his house, he was being sued for the money the bank lost.
Yeah.
I mean, it's awful, I believe. Every community listening to this and every church, pastor, elder, minister, body of Christ member has a responsibility to say, how could I be involved? Dan, I know you believe this. It's not the size of the church, the size of the building. It's our relationship with Christ and what we can do with the resources that Jesus gives us. They may be in the arts, they may be in communication, radio, TV, or they may just be giving your neighbor a smile.
Wow. Looking back, Jeremy, would you have done anything differently?
Oh, yeah. So many, many things. I think when I look back at my attitude from years gone by, my attitude was awful.
Mm-hmm.
I thank God he has forgiven me for that.
In what way was it awful?
Well, just like refusing to work and being so arrogant, saying, hey, God's put me in the ministry. you know, God must have sat up there in heaven and either laughed or cried. Said, really? you know, I believe he gave me a word back then. He said, well, it's my ministry. I believe I heard God saying to me,
yeah,
son, it's your ministry. You fund it, you anoint it, you bless it, and you take care of me. And when you're ready to give it back to me, then I will take care of it and you.
Wow.
It's all about the attitude, Dan. It's about relationships. It's about not criticizing, not judging people.
Yeah.
We as Christians, we have some good discussion about this earlier today. We are so judgmental. I mean, it's like if somebody has a need out there in the world, evangelical born-again Christians are not necessarily the first people that the world comes to for comfort.
Sure.
We're known as the anti-people.
Yeah.
You're against this, they're against that. We should be people that those in need come to running for help and encouragement.
Yeah.
All we want to do is bash them. You know what, Dan? They're behaving like they should.
Yeah.
We're the ones who are not behaving like we should. We should just be not judging, sharing, and showing the love of Jesus. So when they're in a state when they want to get right, they will come to us because we've already formed a relationship with them.
Well, we're speaking with Jeremy Reynolds, who has now got a PhD from Biola. Congratulations. If people want to get more information, tell us the website and also the Facebook site.
Oh, good question, Dan. It's joyjunction.org or facebook.com/joyjunction. We would love for them to be our friends. Also, they can check out my brand new book, my first novel, Dan, just like you.
Yeah.
10 minutes about a guy that makes a wrong choice and the series of consequences that unfolds. But again, joyjunction.org or facebook.com/10minutes.
Jeremy Reynolds, thank you so much.
God bless you, Dan. Have an awesome day.
You have been listening to Front Page Radio with international journalist Dan Wooding. If you would like a free subscription to the Assist News Service, log on to assistnews.net. And if you would like to write to Dan, send an email to assistnews@aol.com. Tune in again for another edition of Front Page Radio on this same station.